Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in. Welcome to our show. I'm Dr. Deborah.
And I'm Coach Kelly.
And we are so excited to be here yet again. It's hard to believe that this is our second show.
Woohoo! We made it.
Yay! We had so much fun last week. I spent probably a good couple of hours after our show last week just getting so excited about having launched.
I think it was a great turnout. We had a great listenership, a lot of calls. It went really well.
We have some emails that we're going to bounce into in a little while today also. You know, I was thinking we were going to do a show today. You know, we just pick a topic each week just so we have some content to throw out there while people get brave enough to call us and sure, et cetera. But we do want you to know that it's you, our listener, who makes the show for us. And so don't be shy. Please, please send us emails during the week. Please call us at 323-203-0815. Today, we're going to focus on obsessive-compulsive disorder, mm-hmm, obsessive-compulsive behaviors, understanding what those are, maybe some differences between those and addictions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's our topic, but we are so open for you to call us about anything.
Exactly. I was just going to say, so even though that is our main topic, feel free to call about anything. It doesn't matter. We're open. And if you want to keep, you don't even have to say your name. If you're nervous that someone's going to recognize you, you can just, you know, make up a name, but feel free. We want to be of service and help.
Absolutely. And I can't believe that it's 2 days away
from Thanksgiving. We talked a lot about anxiety in the holidays, and now it's getting a little bit closer. So again, if you also have anxiety or questions about the holidays, feel free to chime in as well. But maybe we should do a little recap of last week, just in case people are tuning in for the first time.
Absolutely. I think we covered a lot of topics, mostly understanding anxiety and depression and how, mm-hmm, those may show up in their specific forms.
We got a call already.
Wonderful. Right. Hello. You're on the air with Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly.
Hello?
Hi. Who is it?
Hi.
Are you nervous?
I'm kind of nervous, sorry.
Okay, take a deep breath. We'll coach you through right now,
exactly,
with some anxiety. Take a deep breath. Focus on the present,
okay,
moment. There you go.
So you all are talking about OCD today?
That's what we're going to talk about.
But feel free. But if your question is unrelated, we'll take it anyway.
Well, you know, I want to talk about OCD. I'm a little worried. I want to protect the privacy of the person that I'm talking about. But I have a family member who is a hoarder.
Okay.
And has been doing this for probably 20-some years. And recently, this person is able to maintain a normal life outside of their home, but then, of course, nobody kind of really knows what's going on in their home. And recently, this person lost their job. And I am very concerned now that without that tie to the outside world, mm-hmm, that they're kind of going to fall into one of those situations where they never leave their house. And you know, for years I have tried, you know, I've gotten some counseling myself about how to sort of handle this because, you know, it's kind of like an addiction. Nothing that I say is going to change. They have to kind of want to change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this is kind of a situation where I really feel like I need to intercede because if I don't, I really feel like this is going to end up very badly.
Well, I think that's great that you're concerned and looking out for your friend.
Absolutely. My first question to you is, does this friend have any recognition that his or her behavior is abnormal or outside the norm or could be problematic?
Yes. I mean, there's definitely shame there. Mm-hmm. You know, this person's car is full of junk. And anytime we go anywhere, there's tons of junk in this car. And they're always apologizing, which, so there's an awareness.
Okay.
But there's also, I don't want to say combativeness, but there's a defensiveness or a protectiveness, which I have to say on some level I understand with the recent, you know, I really don't like those shows that are on about hoarders because I feel like they exploit this behavior for ratings. And I don't, mm-hmm. you know, these people have real problems that they need help with. And I do understand because I guess what I see when I watch those shows is I see shaming. And I think that's where this person's kind of stuff, the shaming, make a long story short, the attitude has kind of changed towards this where people really kind of make fun of these folks. And it's a real problem.
Absolutely. Was there a specific event that maybe set this in motion? Mm-hmm. Sometimes people who are hoarders do have elements of that. They're in that direction already throughout most of their life, but then there's a specific event like a loss of a family member
right.
or a breakup of a relationship or the death of a pet,
mm-hmm.
Something that...
I think it was a breakup of a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what hoarding is. I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Deborah, but it's really holding on to that emotion. They're thinking objects are sort of, it's almost that physical tie back to that event or person or thing.
I like to think of it kind of as a young child who has a security blanket.
Mm-hmm.
That's called a transitional object. It's like the connection between when mommy's not there
yes.
or daddy's not there, but that blankie represents
mm-hmm.
All the emotion and the feelings. So people will attach to different objects also that kind of investment because it's representing that emotional connection, as you're saying,
yes.
Kelly. So it's really important to understand what the meaning of the hoarding is for this individual and to try to be extra compassionate and empathetic about how difficult it would be to let go of that if there isn't some healthy replacement.
Mm-hmm.
So when anytime there's an intervention of some sort, I think it's really important to be presenting methods of self-soothing, methods of understanding grief and loss and
mm-hmm.
all those types of things. Otherwise, it's going to backfire because you're saying, you know, I want you to give up something that's precious to you.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense. Does this person want or sort of have mentioned that he or she wants help in any way?
Well, they've tried before, mainly talk therapy, you know, to mm-hmm. do something more like a cognitive behavioral therapy has never been something that this person has tried. I think mainly because, one, it's sometimes hard to find people who'll do that. I mean, that's what I've been told anyway. And then, two, just doing those types of things is hard for this person to try to face this stuff and get rid of things and change the way they're living, even in small bits. To be perfectly honest, even let somebody into their place and into that. I mean, I haven't seen it in, I don't know, 15 years. I don't have any idea what it looks like inside anymore.
Has anyone... go ahead.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
I was just wondering if starting on a very small scale, let's say like with the car, if
mm-hmm.
somebody who's very close to this person would take a day or 2 days and just kind of go through the motions of saying, let's just learn how to organize and learn how to do this and almost do a little bit of a ceremonial ritualistic goodbye to
mm-hmm.
some of these items and really putting this person in charge and in control of letting go as
mm-hmm.
opposed to somebody coming in and saying, clean up this mess. What's wrong with you? You know,
sure.
because that sort of attitude is only going to breed more shame and defensiveness.
And
right.
I think also...
Go ahead.
Say, if there's a resistance, I feel like there's other ways for the person, which I don't think they realize right away, where they can hold that emotional attachment without actually holding the object, taking pictures of objects, you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe even with each object, writing in a journal about what that object means to him or her.
Okay.
So there's ways that they can still kind of hold on to that without actually physically keeping it.
And even prioritizing, you know, from the top to the bottom in terms of, okay, this cluster of things are the absolute most important. You know, maybe
mm-hmm.
there's newspaper articles that represent something very powerful and meaningful in this person's life. Even going into maybe some hypnosis or something like that to try
mm-hmm.
to identify whether there was a significant loss in this person's life way earlier on
right.
that is actually reinstigating some of these feelings of pain that the new objects are holding on to, that it may not just be as recent as the breakup. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, and well, and I guess now that you're saying this, it actually sounds like a really good idea to start with the car, because one, it's small, and we can chunk it up. Two, this person doesn't have a job now, so we have time, and I'm concerned that without them having that outside and that feeling of accomplishment that you get from accomplishing things at work, mm-hmm. again, that there's going to be a downward spiral. And, you know, to at least be able to clean out your car mm-hmm. would be a sense of accomplishment that maybe could replace some of what, you know, the loss of the job.
I think it's also really important to state at the beginning how hard it's going to be, how proud you are of him or her for going through this, and that you will be there every step of the way. It's going to get emotional. It's going to get hard, but you're going to work together, work through it. I think a lot of people don't even realize just how hard it is until they start doing it.
Right.
And also de-shaming the process by maybe finding some support groups in your area, or therapy groups where other people who have combated this problem in their lives or who have gone through the process, who could speak out and share some of their journey and what that was like for them. That can also be very supportive. You know, I mean, Coach Kelly and I are all about supportive mechanisms as opposed to bashing, lashing.
Of course. Shaming.
Right. Well, and because with this kind of stuff, you know, I've run the gamut. I've tried that before. I mean, because until you really have been around it for a long time, it's very difficult to understand.
Right.
And it's very hard on the people around you because it's frustrating. You just want to say, just get rid of the junk.
Right.
I don't understand why you're keeping this. And so, and as you can hear it in my voice, I still have some of that, which I have to work on to kind of rein in, because that's not going to help the process.
And that's a really a quick mindset change for you. Instead of framing it in your mind as get rid of this junk, it's how are we going to help you let go of some of these extremely valuable memories and items that mean so much to you?
Okay.
Because the junk really does imply that this is garbage. You know, you're holding on to garbage. Well, people protect their, what do they say about garage sales? One person's treasure is another junk is another person's treasure. Right?
But what if it is, Dr. Deborah, what if it is like flyers, you know, from 1991 that they have in their car? It's really meaningless, but it's still hard for them to throw away.
Well, I think, you know, still, again, it's the attitude of gentleness and mm-hmm. of being, you know, very cognizant that this person has a lot more attachment to that, and trying to understand what that meaning is. What is this person afraid to let go of or to lose in their life by letting go of those flyers? There's one thing I do want to add, though. There is a difference between people who hoard things versus people who hoard animals. And I won't ask you to disclose which that is. But I think when it comes to animals, which are other living creatures, mm-hmm. that's where, you know, any kind of intervention, whatever is going to help protect,
is
absolutely essential. Yeah. So a little bit of this softness that we're recommending, if anybody else is listening who has encountered somebody with an animal hoarding situation, that can be very, very dangerous, not to mention the hygiene, health concerns, and you know that
because we've got lives at stake.
Absolutely. So,
well, so let's say we start this. You know, I am able to talk to this person, and they're interested in doing the car thing. What if we kind of get started with it, and they can't get rid of anything?
Well, I think anything would probably be not the likely. Probably there'd be some willingness to get rid of even just, I mean, keep your expectations extremely low.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a win-win if you got rid of one empty coffee mug from one of the fast food places of 7 years ago, right?
Yeah.
If you just, sometimes education is also helpful, just educating mm-hmm. about hygiene and things like that to help mm-hmm. somebody understand how these things can really have detrimental consequences, that the risks really don't outweigh the benefits of holding on to them. So that's another version of intervention.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm just going to kind of recap what we talked about, make sure I didn't miss anything because I wrote down some things. So take pictures, which I had never thought of before, mm-hmm. which actually sounds like a good idea. And you know, I've never really watched any of those shows, but I've watched some stuff like that, and I've never seen anybody do that before. But that kind of seems like
a more general,
I don't know, a way for them to keep it with them.
Exactly,
it's a way of archiving the memory.
And then they don't feel like they're giving up everything. It's
sure.
Like, okay, I still sort of have it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And then journaling, also can help. And then really making sure, I guess, when we start this process, that I've tried to change my mindset from, you know, let's do this, let's get rid of the junk, you know, gung-ho, gung-ho, to, I think the word you used was valuable, these valuable memories, these valuable objects for you. Mm-hmm. Is that what you said? Sorry.
Absolutely. Yes.
I'm going to try to parrot exactly what you said, yeah, because it is hard for me to change my mindset.
They're symbolic of something. And I think when you share your interest and empathy and compassion and understanding the meaning of these objects for this person, you're going to more than likely lower the resistance factor. Because then it's not an attack. Yeah. Then it's not, look what's wrong with you. You're deficient. You're this, you're that. But instead it's like, wow, I get it. That's really important to you. But let's look at that importance is also costing you some very valuable experiences in your life. And so let's try to rebalance that.
And also, too, I want to say it's so important to have compassion for the person, because I think that person, it is so shameful. It's almost like getting like a gynecological exam. Like it's like they're opening up their world. It's so invasive.
Right.
And for us, it's like throw the freaking, you know, paper away. What's the problem? But like for them, I guess it's really digging deep and opening up because there's so much stuff on the inside that we just can't see. So just having some compassion for that.
And I'm so glad you reached out, because you really need support, too. It's very challenging to do any kind of intervention, especially when you are met with defensiveness and resistance. And oftentimes, the more we care about somebody, then the more likely we get angry when they won't make changes that we see would be so beneficial to them. And that anger then leads to shame and leads to guilting them. And then it's a vicious negative spiral that gets out of control for everybody. And then everybody's crying in their own corners and not feeling like they have any support.
Right.
Yep, we've been there. Yeah. I'm going to try to get out of there.
No doubt.
But thank you so much for
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your advice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's so beautiful when somebody is willing to take the risk and call us and share these things, because there could be many other people out there right now listening to that and saying, wow, that
who
could
have
really
the same
help.
Situation.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
Absolutely. It's common. It's very common. I mean, I have a family member who has similar issues. So it's very, very common.
Have you ever had any of your own types of things or items that trouble?
No, I'm like the opposite of a hoarder. I'm like, get rid of it. I hate holding on to things. I like need, I just don't want to hold on to junk. I mean, sure, there's, you know, a couple things that are sentimental, but I'm like the opposite. Like, I do not like to have a lot of stuff and boxes, and I'm, you know, I don't know. I think it just overwhelms me to have that much. How about you?
I can relate to a hoarder.
Oh, you can? Yeah.
I wouldn't say that any of my life resembles actually being a hoarder, or that's not something in my life that I've ever had to conquer.
Sure.
But certainly can be a pack rat. Certainly can let that garage start closing in where there's no more cars that are allowed to fit. And a lot of it is exactly what we're talking about. I mean, trying to understand it on that continuum. It's about memories. It's about, wow, am I going to miss that in 35 years when I want to share something with my daughter that I remember that I thought was special. I want her to have that. You know, for me, though, I have been able to, especially with the internet and with all kinds of abilities on the computer, you can take a lot of paper and you can just pay somebody if I don't have the time to do it, to actually scan that consolidated scan. And then, you know, that's a very easily storable memory.
Fantastic. Exactly. Yeah, so I totally agree.
At least technology has helped in that regard.
That is very true. Well, I think we should probably go back for the layperson, and maybe you can explain just a general what is compulsive behavior, because hoarders fall into that umbrella, but I think it's important to discuss the generality of it.
Yeah, well, there's something called obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD is commonly known, and it's two components. So there are people who have obsessions without compulsions. There are people who have compulsions without obsessions, but usually they tend to go together in some form. Obsessions are recurrent thoughts that play in our minds that we can't get rid of. It's just a thought that repeats itself. It's like the old long play records, when we call it, it's like a broken record. It gets stuck in that groove and it just keeps playing the same message over and over again, which actually can come in the form of being fearful of germs or contamination, repeated doubt, worrying that you did something to hurt someone, which never happened. And sometimes they can be of severe types of sexual imagery, as in sexual molesting children, things like that. And that usually is very disturbing to somebody if these if these thoughts are going through their head when they've never actually acted on it, never would, mm-hmm. but it terrifies them. Then the compulsion comes in. That's the actual behavior. That's mm-hmm. a repetitive behavior that somebody engages in order to try to remedy whatever the obsession is about. So let's say I am terrified of germs.
Right.
And there are some famous people out there
yes.
that you see this. Howie Mandel. Not my
yeah.
relative. I wish, but not. so you can see him on his shows. He doesn't shake hands with
right.
people. He knuckles it. You know,
yes.
he says knuckles. Because he apparently, I don't know him personally, but he does have a fear
OCD. Yeah.
of germs.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, that compulsion is to, you know, he may have hand washing, ritualistic hand washing, where people just feel like they have to do that maybe 50 times, maybe 60 times.
Okay, but wait, let me pause for 1 second. What is the difference between like just a phobia and an actual like, you know, obsession with germs? Like, let's say you just kind of maybe have a little bit of a phobia of germs or a fear versus like an obsession.
Well, that's just it. In a fear, you'll think about it when it's present and you'll probably take some action in order to prevent yourself from becoming mm-hmm. in line of
right.
that germ, whatever that is,
right?
Right, contaminated. But in an obsession, it's a thought about it. There isn't even the option of that occurring in the moment. You're just thinking about it
constantly.
All the time.
So it's unmanageable because you can't. You're just constantly thinking about it.
And with most of these things, think of them on a continuum. So people can have mild OCD.
Right.
People can have very severe OCD.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that, which, for example, for myself, I am convinced that in another life, I burned a house down. I'm just convinced of it. I am just somehow, somewhere,
uh-huh.
that I've hurt an animal or done something, uh-huh. and it really terrifies me. So when I make my breakfast before I leave the house, which I usually eat while I'm going to
yeah.
my office or going somewhere else, my egg whites and my
right.
little cheese, and that's what I make. And then I have actually gone back to look at having turned off the stove like
yeah.
3 or 4 times. I'll be in my car.
Yep.
I'll have it started. Ugh, I have to yes. unstart the car to get the key to go back in the house. And I'll
make
check
sure.
it. And I'll say, do I smell gas? Do,
uh-huh.
do I see the flames? Is it off? And this actually got started because one day I left
uh-huh.
the house and I hadn't turned the burner off.
And you came back and it smelled like gas?
Well, fortunately, the flame was on.
Oh,
so when the flame is
God.
On, it can't cause harm. And I have at that time, I didn't have a child living with me, but
yeah.
I have my cats.
Oh,
and so it just activated this terror
sure.
in me. So now, I mean, I'm really working at trying to manage that.
But I feel like, is there a sense of normalcy in that? Because I do that too. I use my flat iron, I plug it in, and there have been moments where I'm like, oh my God, I want to make sure I unplugged it and I'll drive back. So how do you know when it's typically normal versus, again, obsessive?
So that would be having an obsession in a moment and a compulsive behavior to manage that obsession in a moment. It's
okay.
not obsessive compulsive disorder, because
correct.
Obsessive compulsive disorder would mean that it is debilitating to your life for at least an hour a day and it's recurrent.
That's
so
good.
It isn't where this, for me anyway, it shows up per that event.
Right.
It's when I'm making the breakfast and I'm leaving the house,
yeah.
per that event is when it shows up. So I'm not really plagued by obsessive compulsive
mm-hmm.
disorder, because once I've checked it enough times where I feel happy with my decision
you're done.
To leave,
you can
I'm done.
Yeah.
I can move on.
Right.
But I will tell you, the part I can relate to is if I force myself to leave the driveway without checking it,
yeah.
I go through 15 minutes of pain in my head, cycling uh-huh. around, what if, which then leads into severe anxiety.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, you know, it's not really stated this way in our diagnostic manuals, et cetera, about OCD, but I look at it as most of the clients that I've worked with, the origin of it is anxiety. There's
mm-hmm.
there's some anxiety somewhere in their lives that hasn't been dealt with. There's been stressors, and the obsessive compulsive behavior comes along to try to master whatever was out of their control at some time.
So
the sad part is that then they're so controlled by the OCD that they've lost control again.
So it's this illusion of control,
mm-hmm.
basically. That's how I see it.
I remember working with a mom who had a daughter. I think she was about 6 at the time, 6 or 7. There was some family stress, some family troubles. And the daughter got into feeling, I guess the superstition was if she flicked the lights on and off like a couple times, she did that and her parents
uh-huh.
stopped fighting.
Oh,
so
wow.
when she would go to bed and she would
oh.
hear her parents fighting, she would start flicking the lights on and off.
Wow.
And it just turned into a full habit of, okay, that's how she was going to control her anxiety about
uh-huh.
not knowing how to deal with her
parents
fighting.
Yeah.
And she developed this compulsion. And then what happened is if she didn't do the light, she would lie in bed and she couldn't go to sleep because she was literally, if you didn't tie her hands down, I'm not saying that was
yeah.
the recommendation, but she had to go do it or she felt so out of control,
right.
so helpless and so afraid.
Uh-huh. But isn't there a genetic component as well?
There does seem to be. I was actually doing a little bit of research on that this last week just to keep myself on top of this.
Yeah.
And the jury's still out as to what the biological or genetic component is.
Mm-hmm.
It does tend to be one, but they haven't really isolated what that is. And I have definitely, over the years of working with people and practice with OCD, discovered that, you know, medication is sometimes a good way to go. I know a lot of people are afraid of that, but when you think about it as, you know, something in your brain that just isn't working right, you know, it's like malfunctioning. And so if you want to tweak it with a little bit of biochemistry change, then
exactly.
it can be helpful.
I mean, it's a mental illness. Wouldn't you could classify it? So it's like if you're a diabetic, you need insulin. I mean, it's the same
Absolutely.
Sort of thing. I think we need to take that shame away, because if your life is so unmanageable with this, you know, why suffer? That's how I see it. Why suffer? And I mean, yes, you can try to white knuckle it, but there's no shame in helping yourself.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. It's very, very, it's a very sensitive issue. And when I look at some of these people when they are really plagued by this stuff, I mean, mm-hmm. we're not talking about, you know, what we're talking about that we've gone through. I'm talking about, you know, where that's constant all day long, this rumination in one's mind, that this recurring thought over and over again, and you feel so out of control. And then there's all these secondary consequences that occur with OCD because people don't understand it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's at least like if it's a tic disorder, somebody would look and say, well, that person has a tic disorder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't help it. But if it's a thing like, oh, you have to, every time you say the word hello, you have to count 50 times in your head backward.
Wow.
I mean, these things that just, they're so time consumptive.
Of course.
And then to be able to imagine having that and having to sit down and have lunch with a friend while your brain is just
going in overdrive.
All these noises
and
just almost screaming at you to think about something, to worry about something.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Another thing that you said, though, that is worthy of note is, you know, these are distinguished from things like excessive worry that comes about when somebody has depression or severe anxiety, you know, feelings of low self-worth that you may ruminate in your mind about, I'm just not good enough.
Right.
Those are not necessarily attached or associated with OCD. That's more associated with self-esteem, shame issues, or maybe depression, and needing to look at those also.
Exactly right. Just a reminder to give us a call at 323-203-0815. We are talking about obsessions and compulsions today, but feel free to call on any topic. We did get an email in. I'd like to read this.
Okay, perfect.
Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, first of all, I really love your show.
Yay!
Thank you. I was so happy you brought up compulsive behaviors for the topic next week because I'm worried about my daughter and I'm wondering if she's a compulsive eater. She's 19, so she's technically an adult, but she still lives with us. I've noticed she'll binge late at night and during meals eat normally with us. I don't want to alienate her because I'm not sure she knows I see her behavior, but I'm worried about her emotional and physical health. She's definitely obese. Signed, worried mom.
Oh, that's a tough one. You want to go for it first?
Sure. Gosh, I can definitely relate to being worried mom. you know, I think my first thought is, you know, there is Overeaters Anonymous, which is a wonderful organization. And I mean, if there's some way that I think that she can get into a 12-step program for this type of stuff, it would just be so helpful to know that she's not alone, because I think that compulsive eating and any type of eating disorder, it's so isolating. And to know that you're not the only one with this issue is so helpful, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And I would say I wish we had Worried Mom on the phone, because that's always, we can ask more questions. But I noticed that she's, you know, she's afraid of alienating her daughter. But I think in reality, when a parent does observe something in their child and there is love between them, I think it's better to actually put it out there. Just say, this is what I notice and I'm concerned about you.
So like kill the big elephant in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Just put it out there and say, you know, I'm your mom. I love you. I noticed this. I don't know if you're concerned about it or not. But if you are disturbed, bothered, upset by something, if you're using food in a way to cope with or deal with something that's hard to deal with, please know that I'm here and I would love to be able to support you in whatever it is that you're going through.
And what if she's not quite ready and she shuts down? Does you just take a step back?
Yeah, I think that at least, you know, I'm a little bit of an over-intrusive mom, so I would probably...
Aren't we all?
I would probably, in my own little subtle manipulative way, send little articles, send little notes, send little things, and just say, I'm here, I get it, you don't want to look at this now, or maybe it's shameful to you, or, you know, I mean, look, we have such an obese phobic culture. I mean, we're the cruelest on the planet to people who have issues with with body size.
Yep.
And it's challenging, you know, and I would say that for this 19-year-old, it'd be also interesting for the mom to maybe take a look at some of her own patterns. Maybe she could identify something in herself that she role modeled that maybe suggested to the daughter that one of the ways you cope with things is to overdo something.
Right.
You know, because what is the overdoing of something? It's usually a way of camouflaging something else that you don't feel you have the skills to do, right? You don't know how to self-soothe, or you don't know how to handle a problem, or an emotion is too difficult to bear. And so you turn to a substance or a process addiction just to have something to try to fill up that hole.
That makes total sense. Yeah. Oh, it's a tough situation. Very, very tough. Thank you so much for reaching out. We really appreciate it, Worried Mom. And feel free to email us again.
And, of course, the phone number again, because we want your calls, is area code 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. Hey, Kelly, Coach Kelly, have you ever dealt with any of your own compulsive eating or anything in that realm?
Absolutely. I am a recovering anorexic, and that, I mean, I can completely relate to the compulsive thoughts and sometimes actions, but it was just, it was a disease of the mind and the constant, the body image thoughts and the, you know, oh, you look fat today. Why are you wearing those jeans? Or you shouldn't be eating that. Or what should you eat? I mean, it was like, it was extremely debilitating. So I can absolutely completely relate and, you know, just feel for all these different, I mean, it's like, you know, and I totally agree with you. It's under the umbrella of anxiety. And it's like, no matter which way it manifests, I think it all really boils down to having anxiety in another arena, but masking it through some sort of way. And in my way was, you know, thinking about these food thoughts and restriction and body image, and other people might be hoarding or compulsive shopping or gambling. It's that anxiety where you just kind of don't know what to do, and you sort of go in another direction because you almost don't want to look at it. I believe.
Yeah, I can completely relate. I knew you and I had that in common, because I went through the gamut of anorexia and bulimia for many years through my high school and young adult life. And yeah, it was torment, actually. I just remember being tormented by it, knowing that I didn't want to keep doing that and not feeling like I had another way. And it was just painful.
Yeah.
When I even look back at that, I feel sad for myself. And it's
so
sad. Feel sad for people who are tormented with that, because it's, you know, people need to understand it's not a choice. It's not like somebody gets up in the morning and goes, oh, I want to do this to myself.
Sure.
It actually gets me pretty angry sometimes when I hear people say, oh, I want to be anorexic.
Yes.
Oh, I envy that person. Oh, my dear.
You do not.
You do not.
It is a nightmare. And I wanted to encourage our listeners that if you are struggling with some sort of compulsion, please seek help. You're not alone. And, you know, there are trained therapists and psychologists who can help you with this. You shouldn't have to go through this alone, and you will feel better. I think there's also that notion of like, well, I'll never get better. And, but you can. Cognitive behavioral therapy, there's all sorts of things. And for eating disorders, an intuitive eating nutritionist really helped me by sort of not a diet mentality. It was more about, really recognizing hunger cues and fullness cues. And it was more of an intuitive scale, which was really nice.
Yeah, the intuitive eating model is my favorite as well. When somebody has a very severe eating disorder, it's a little premature, though, to be able to do that, because they're not in tune yet with their hunger. So there are some steps to take.
They need nutrition to even,
nutrition, and sometimes you have to just go by a plan. You have to do this plan, and then slowly but surely, when you recalibrate your body back to its natural devices to give you hunger signals, then absolutely the intuitive eating model is works. The method of choice, in my opinion, for sure. Yeah.
And there's an app from Dr. Jen Berman called No More Diets, which is great too. And I love that. I think it's so important, especially for, you know, if we have young listeners. I think a lot of teens struggle with this much more than when I was a teenager, and I feel bad for them, you know. And I think in our media, in our culture today, it's still so prized to be thin, and you know, people forget about the airbrushing on the magazine covers, and you know, these crash diets that these stars are doing. And these cleanses and all of those things. I mean, it's not reality.
My clients always hate me when in the first couple months, if they've come in for an eating disorder, and I actually tell them I will not work with them unless they get rid of every single woman's magazine
that's
out there, because it's overstimulation. You're continually trying to then swim uphill without a paddle, and you're constantly, because in that mindset, that's all you're doing all day long, comparing to this one, comparing to that one, comparing to this one.
It's a smart
It's
step.
Unrealistic, and it's crazy making.
And I think throwing away the scale too.
I'm a
big proponent for that. Mm-hmm. I think there's so much power in that number, and it can kind of set you off, and I think you can go by your clothes. I mean, if you feel like you're, you know, gaining some weight, and you know, you're on the unhealthy scale in that way, and you're just gaining some weight, you go by your clothes. But I think the number can kind of, again, make us compulsive in that way.
What's tragic is it used to be predominantly a female disorder. It is increasing in droves in men. It's just so much more prevalent. And that same kind of obsession with, you know, what's out there and what you're supposed to look like, mm-hmm. and, you know, the ideal model of beauty, et cetera, is just, it's plaguing men now too. So this is not a healthy direction. We don't all need to fall into the abyss of pain in order to get better. It's okay
it's
to move ourselves out of that.
I got an email the other day. It was so cool. It was, beauty around the world and what was considered beautiful. So they had sort of this standard woman, and they sent it to all different countries and had a photoshopper in each country photoshop the woman to what that country considered beautiful.
And were they vastly different?
Very different. So in some countries, you know, she had fuller cheeks and bigger eyes. In some countries, you know, smaller eyes and more sculpted cheeks. And, you know, in some countries, she was just fuller overall. And it was just, it was absolutely amazing. And it reminded us that it's like, it's almost, we're creating this in some ways. It's really, you know, really, really fascinating.
Absolutely. We did get another email last week in between shows that I'd like to read to us. Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, I'm worried about my finances and deeply in debt. I don't even want to tell you the number I owe. But despite that, I can't stop spending. I feel like I'm in so deep anyway, why not go further? But I think I need help and don't know where to start. Thanks.
Financial stuff. I don't think she's alone in this at all.
Especially right now around the holidays, how many people just shoot the wad, right? Here it is. I'll deal with the credit cards later. Spend, spend, spend.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's so easy, too, with a credit card to just go and then just worry about it later versus paying cash, and you can kind of see directly what you're spending.
Well, I think one of the hard things about compulsive spending is that it's not that tangible. You don't really see it ongoingly, right? So you can do the spending, but you don't necessarily feel the pain of the consequences.
Yeah,
so
until
it
later.
Can show up a lot later. Whereas, let's say, what we were talking about, an eating disorder, you're day in and day out struggling with this process of doing something behaviorally that you don't want to be doing.
Right.
But when you're spending, it's, I think, a little bit easier to say, delay the consequence. Oh, you know, I'll have fun now. I'll deal with it later. And then when the later comes, it can be absolutely devastating, but it's such a slow build.
Yep, exactly. I mean, I think for this person, I think it's both. I think it's going to a financial counselor to sort of help figure out kind of where he or she needs to go from there. And then also, I mean, obviously there's some emotional components to this too. And so, or maybe a financial counselor who's trained in both, who can deal directly with the finances and kind of how to get her out of this. And then also dealing a little bit with the emotional, what's really going on? What's the underneath pain? Because obviously she's spending to cover up something.
I agree wholeheartedly. And that is probably the number one step for this person who wrote to us, she didn't leave a name, is to really try to identify what is that hole that she's trying to fill up. You know, is there some feelings of loss? Is there some discontent in her life that she's hoping that will fulfill?
Yep.
And what's interesting, though, too, is, I mean, from very young age, I don't know if it's as true for boys as it is for girls, but it's like having a rough day, mom says, let's go shopping.
Absolutely.
Let's
retail
go
therapy.
Shopping. Yes.
I'm guilty of it sometimes. Come on. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you get trained, just like when somebody gives somebody a cookie, if their child has fallen down and say, it's okay, honey, here's a cookie. Mm-hmm. And then you learn to feed certain needs with mismatches, right? So
exactly.
If you're lonely, if you're sad, if you're bored, if you're in pain about something emotionally, taking that credit card out and running to the mall might feel good in the moment, but it really is a mismatch to what you're really needing. What you're really needing is to figure out what is that emotion or what is that experience that is so uncomfortable, and then learning how to deal with that.
Exactly. To sit with the discomfort and then healing from there. Because it's an inside job. Something out there is not going to fix, something inside, but it's so easy to think it will. It's like, oh, but I really want that sweater. It's so beautiful, or the new pair of shoes. But it's really about what's going on in the inside and how to heal that. And I think it is easier in so many ways to sort of deal with that superficially, because going intrinsically and kind of looking at that, it's painful. It doesn't feel good. It's tough.
We are such a pleasure-driven society as opposed to a happiness-driven society, and people will often confuse the two because pleasure is just a momentary experience of a boost in dopamine or norepinephrine, an adrenaline boost in the brain that gives you this feeling of elation.
Yes.
But it's not long lasting. It is not, it's not happiness.
Yes.
Because happiness is a constant state of being while you still have all your emotions on top of that, but it's a level of contentment with yourself, with the world, with your life, and thereby not really needing a whole bunch of those pleasure boosts.
Yeah. That makes total sense. Well, I think maybe we should talk about how to alleviate these compulsive behaviors, because I think it's so important, especially coming up with the holidays. And so maybe we should talk a little bit about those to help those people out there struggling.
Absolutely. And as you already pointed out, I think that if you have anything that is really debilitating in your life, it's causing you problems in your social relationships, your occupational life, in your personal relationship, intimate relationships, or with your health, that's generally an indication that you have a condition that is possibly outside of your control, and you probably need some professional assistance in that.
Yeah.
That's clearly beyond the scope of this show, but absolutely, go to your local referral agencies. Mm-hmm. Like here in Los Angeles, we have the Los Angeles County Psychological Association. There's the Ventura County. And so all over in big cities, you can go to that. And, there's other websites that give you online connections to different referrals. So, take that step, because it's so important to have a full life, right?
Yes.
And if you just succumb to being debilitated by something that you really don't have that much choice over, unless you empower yourself with different tools, then it would be just such a sad, tragic experience. That's why we're doing this show, because we want people to know, don't do that to yourself.
Exactly. There's so much more to life than struggling.
But there are a couple of things that there are out there that do tend to be helpful to these. One of them is called thought stopping, which is, let's say if you have obsessions in your mind, I know it sounds almost paradoxical what we're talking about, like you can't stop them and take over. But I think if you make a conscious choice to be mindful of what those thoughts are, you write them down, you then can do a reality check as to what is the legitimacy of this obsession. How likely is that to occur? How likely is that to happen? And then you can say, okay, I can indulge myself for about 15 minutes in this rumination, and then I stop. And you put a timer on, and you stop, and you say now, and then give yourself some options of things that intrigue you or please you, things that are interesting to you, so that you don't get bored, because in boredom also is where a lot of obsessions tend to
make sense.
Boredom
sure.
and fear. So you try to regulate yourself through those emotions so that you're at a place of more contentment, and then it's likely that the obsessional aspect will decrease.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I even like picturing a stop sign sometimes when I'm going through, some compulsive thoughts, just literally picturing a red stop sign. There's something pretty powerful about that. Sometimes it can help just imagining stop, and then you can kind of, shift your mind in other direction.
Absolutely. And that's the other point too, is then you can thought replace also. So it's just as easy to think about something positive as it is to think about something negative.
Yes.
It's a thought process regardless.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm happier when people start ruminating about something that's positive.
Sure.
So that you can do little mantras, you can do little things where you kind of sing to yourself, I'm a cool person. I'm a cool person. Don't worry, I'm not going to give up my day job
for
a singing career.
Should
but thank you
right But it's good. I mean, but even that fact that it gave you a humorous little, you know, jolt can help, I think, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other is to actually depersonalize the obsessions. When people get into obsessive thinking, they tend to hold on very dearly to their obsessions as if those are who they are.
Yes.
And that is not what defines you. It has become possibly what defines you. Mm-hmm. But if you put a little detachment and distance between that thought is just a thought unless you give it power. Mm-hmm. So if you can just put some of that distance aside, then sometimes you can get some clarity about it and just sort of regulate it. It's kind of like, okay, well, that was a sneeze. I have a cold, but I'm not a sneeze. I just happen to sneeze.
Exactly. Right. Not making it be about you as the person, just a part of you, the good, the bad, everything. I also like to imagining with a thought, you can almost take it outside of yourself. Like, here's the thought and it's not me. And maybe it has a name or maybe it has a being or a persona. And I don't really wish to associate with that person, persona, whatever, and almost make it something else. So you can kind of push it aside a little bit easier.
And I think dealing with the secondary consequences is also very important in terms of being able to regulate with some of these issues. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you happen to be in a highly judgmental group of people, then and you're actually really struggling with some sort of obsession or compulsive process that's going on that's maybe heightened at this time of year, this in whatever situation you're in, then you know, it's okay sometimes to pass or limit the amount of time that you spend with people in those situations, because it's far more helpful to be around friends and family who love you, where you say, my OCD is acting up today. Yes. So bear with me if I seem a little distracted. Sometimes simply naming what is helps take the power out of it. It's like what 100%. I say when I'm anxious, am I anxious? I go, I'm anxious.
Raising your hand, admitting it, and then you can kind of move forward, because it's like, if you don't say anything, it's like you're thinking about it, you're obsessing over it even more. But I think you're right. Once you just kind of throw it out there, it's done. You can move on from there. I agree. So I think that we did talk a little bit about medication that may be in order. Absolutely. And there's just no shame in that. And, I just think life is so short that why struggle and be in so much pain when, that might be a solution for you.
And there's some new research and suggesting, too, that certain vitamin therapy, some people are more opposed to the psychotropic medication.
Yes.
But I've worked with some fabulous psychiatrists who actually really much more into the wellness, holistic, natural stuff, and have discovered that certain things can really be helpful.
I'd like to speak on that, actually, because I like L-theanine a lot for anxiety. And you can buy it at a natural food store. That's been great. There's also niacin. Mm-hmm. These are all natural vitamins. Folic acid, I've heard, is great too. So I think a lot of times we are deficient in vitamins, and that can contribute to a lot of this. So I'm a natural person myself who believes in these holistics. A lot of people are into homeopathy. Mm-hmm. So, I think there's truth to that too.
And most importantly, just starting from ground zero, right? I mean, how do we regulate ourselves as human beings? We're just like infants in so many ways. Mm-hmm. We all need to eat. We need to sleep. We need to have stimulation. We need to have play.
Right.
And so that's the way we have to look at ourselves. When we're suffering or struggling with something, go back to basics and say, am I taking care of that first tier? Because if you're trying to regulate way at the top, self-actualization, et cetera, when you're really suffering on the basic survival skills, then you got to just go back there. Just go back to, human kindness and behavior 101. What do you need to give to yourself to nourish and nurture yourself so that you can get as healthy as you can be?
It's so true. I feel like a lot of times we're so hard on ourselves. And if we just were gentle and kind, I mean, it only helps.
Then you look at those people who aren't hard on themselves at all.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Like, how do you do that? How are you so cool with yourself? And, you make a mistake. Whatever. The laid back people, those surfers who could just kind of suck it up. It's nice. We all need to learn from that.
There you go. So a little bit of less perfectionism and more good enough. Just
Absolutely.
Being good enough.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we're going to have to wrap things up. We have some information to give out to our listeners. We want to give you that phone number again for next time. It's area code 323-203-0815.
You could also follow us on Facebook at Dr. Debra and Coach Kelly.
And I understand that our shows are now going to be on podcasts.
Yes.
On iTunes.
This is very exciting.
Right. And do we know how to send people to that?
Yes. So you go to iTunes, and if you look under the podcast section, you can subscribe to our show. You just look up Dr. Debra and Coach Kelly. You can find us, and it's also on Stitcher.com, which is for iPhones, Androids, all the other phones, technology. It's just amazing.
Well, thank you so much for your calls and your emails and for listening. And next week, we're going to be just opening it up to relationships, talking about sex, intimacy, family, coworkers.
Relationships of all sorts. Boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, mothers, any relationship that you have. Very excited.
Yes, just bring it on, and we're here to help.
Very cool. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day.
And happy holiday.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.